Well, it's all right. Riding around in the breeze. Well, it's all right. If you live the life you please. Well, it's all right.
Welcome to the Dog Talk Show. I'm your host, Julie Forbes. You're listening to Alternative Talk, 1150 AM. And we are here today with a wonderful guest, author John Katz of Soul of a Dog, is here in the studio with us today. Welcome to Seattle, John.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So this show could not be more perfectly timed, as last weekend I actually had to let go of my 12-year-old dog, Chewy, who I've been talking about on previous shows. We just actually did a breed DNA test, and we found out that he was bleeding internally and happened sort of unexpectedly. He was 12, and so I've been going through that since, you know, for the past week, certainly at least. And so, John, your visit here comes wonderfully timed, and I am really looking forward to talking with you about your book. And there's all sorts of wonderful stories about your dogs and your reflections on, well, it says reflections on the spirits of the animals of Bedlam Farm, which is your farm in New York, right?
Upstate New York, right?
Yeah.
Way up.
Yeah. And you have, dog-wise, two border collies and a black lab.
Lenore, the Hound of Love.
Yeah, the love dog. And Rose, the queen of the farm, 7-year-old border collie.
Right.
And Izzy is also 7-year-old male.
Right.
Not quite the work ethic, though, of Rose.
Well, he does.
He's
a hospice therapy dog, so he does. He has a very intense work ethic for that. He doesn't. He's not interested in running around after sheep.
Yeah. Well, that position seems to be filled fully with Rose.
Definitely.
So, we are certainly open for callers. If people have comments at any time, feel free to give us a call, 425-373-5527, or toll free in Western Washington, 888-298-5569. Why don't you just tell us a little bit about yourself, John, and what inspired you to write the book, and just kind of give us an introductory to yourself.
Well, I have a 100-acre farm in upstate New York, and I have the four dogs, the two border collies, the lab, and a new dog, Frida, who's a rescue Rottweiler Shepherd mix. It's quite challenging. and I've lived up with some other animals, sheep and donkeys primarily, and goats and cows at various times. And this is my seventh book about dogs. I got into this subject because I remember reading a Harvard School of Health survey taken in 1960, and asked Americans whether they thought their companion animals had souls. And 98% said no. That was kind of a silly question. Dogs couldn't have souls. And they took the same survey 3 years ago, and it was exactly the opposite. 98% said, of course they have souls. Why would you even ask a question like that? And I was amazed at the shift. What would cause such a seismic shift in just a generation, really? An idea that was considered ludicrous a while back was now almost universally held. And I also am aware from my other books and my research in general, of the growing emotional connection between people and companion animals. You talked about Chewy and the grieving you're feeling. All along the book tour, people are just torn up about the loss for years sometimes, and I don't quite know how to deal with it. This is pretty new, too. The life of a dog in America 30 years ago was unbelievably different. They ran loose pretty much. They hadn't even invented, there wasn't even such a thing as dog food until the 60s.
Probably a good thing, actually.
Maybe. They just ate scraps and garbage. And they ran loose and had sex and got into trouble. And if something happened to them, you just got another dog.
Yeah.
And people didn't spend money on vet bills and all of that.
Yeah.
So I think what we're seeing, what I wanted to write about was the need we have for these animals, which is, I think, is growing. I think as our society becomes disconnected, a little fragmented, technology is stressful, politics is difficult, religion is kind of weakened a bit. So people are looking for something to love and something they can depend on. Mm-hmm. And more and more dogs and cats are filling that role. As to the soul question, you know, I don't have an answer, obviously. I wouldn't, I don't know if dogs have souls. For me, I thought I used the secular definition of a soul, which is the animating spirit of an animal. Rose's case, it would be work. In Lenore, it would be affection. Izzy would be connection with people. Now, the religious definitions are different. You know, in Christianity, dogs don't go to heaven. They don't have souls. They don't ascend. And Judaism doesn't really deal with it. And Muslim faith pretty much is in line with Christianity. The only religion that talks about animals having spirits really is Buddhism. And I went back and found some of the early writings about this subject, Plato, Aristotle, Socrates, Thomas Aquinas. I was really fascinated by all of these people who have been writing about this for thousands of years, fascinated by this question of, are human and animal souls different? Are they like us or are we like them? Do they have souls? Should they have souls? And one of the things that occurred to me researching the book is that in Plato's time, the human soul was considered sacred. Human beings were just beginning to reshape the world. They were inventing culture. They were inventing democracy. They were inventing, you know, science. And there was a sense of great possibility for them. The human spirit was supposed to be an amazing thing. Animals were seen as either food or just, you know, things that hauled hay around. But it was the human spirit that was really worshipped. In our day, I think it's beginning to turn, and that people are disappointed in people. We're beginning to worship animals. Mm-hmm. And when's the last time anybody criticized a dog that you know?
Yeah.
And it's a big change. It's a huge change.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's caused a lot of redefinition of our relationship with these species,
mm-hmm.
getting very close to them.
I have a lot of quotes from your book in front of me that we could spend hours talking about. But, you know, it's interesting as we really look at human need and, you know, what we're creating out of our own needs and subconscious and conscious and all that. There's a quote that says, "Primitive man must tame the animal in himself and make it his helpful companion. Civilized man must heal the animal in himself and make it his friend." And I think that that is something that dogs really bring to our lives and something that I work with my clients on a lot in behavioral training issues with their dogs, is that if people can get back in touch with that animal part of themselves, communication with their dogs is so much easier and so much more natural. And when we get kind of caught up in our head and we talk, and we're not present about our energy, what we're doing with our body, our actions, our follow through, our intention, which is mainly how dogs communicate with each other. It seems like that's something that I try to presence in my clients as they're trying to understand and work with and live with their own dogs. And a lot of people don't really have a clue about dogs, and then they get dogs. They don't understand them as animals. And I think that in understanding dogs as animals who have evolved with people for anywhere from 14,000 years to over 100,000 years, in understanding dogs as animals, I think we kind of get back in touch with our animal sides as well, which I think there's a need for that today.
That's a very good point. I think, the part of it that I certainly resonate with especially is that I worry that, as I'm sure you're referring to that, people are losing touch with the animal nature of animals, and they're seeing them as little children,
mm-hmm.
and they're treating them as children, and they're talking to them as children. And the dogs don't understand that message. You know, that's not the way they communicate. They don't understand the words or the feelings. And I think it's impossible to train a dog who's being treated as a child, just as you would not want to raise a child like a dog. I mean, they're just very different, and we're losing the difference. And I think it's true. I think that turning into the animal parts of ourselves would help us understand them, certainly.
Mm-hmm.
But I think what I see happening is people are really losing touch with them as animals. They
mm-hmm.
just don't see them as animals anymore.
Mm-hmm.
They don't like that. This is not a message people want to hear from me, and I suspect it's not a message they want to hear from you either. They just don't. It's not what they want to hear. They want to hear that their dog is just like an adorable little kid, and if they shower it with love, that everything will work out.
Yeah.
And that doesn't usually happen, mm-hmm. I'm afraid.
It's been my experience that people, once they understand why, that they're pretty open to, like, okay, it might be hard for them to make this adjustment for themselves, but I've found people to be, at least my clients, pretty open to the, you know, to being reminded of or educated about the dog's needs as dogs, and that it's not just affection and love. They need structure, they need a job, they need mental stimulation, physical exercise, all that kind of stuff. And there's another quote from your book that says, if animals lack human-style consciousness, if they act purely out of instinct, why do we have so much trouble accepting that? Why do we need so badly to remake them in our own image? And what came to mind for me is that we do that even in our thoughts of a god, that it's, you know, a man with a white beard sitting up in heaven. And then, you know, and how we do that with our animals, and how we do that because it's what we comprehend. It's what our minds can grasp, and actually how limiting that is to other creatures. You know, they're not like us. We can't understand really what it is like to think like a dog or a donkey. You know, what's the level of consciousness? You know, how do they think if they don't have language like we do? What are thoughts like? Are they there? Are they not there? But it is interesting that we really, you know, this whole anthropomorphizing and putting human traits onto dogs helps us to understand them, but it also limits our understanding of them too, and just sort of letting them be and being okay with what you said at the beginning of the show. You know, I don't know. Ultimately, I don't really know. Do dogs have souls? I don't know. I have, you know, I can say what I'm likely to believe, but to say that I know, I mean.
No. There's a mystery to them that is very precious to me. You know, you read, I'm sure, a lot of these studies that I read. I was fascinated to kind of explore, you know, I mean, a dog whose owners will call you is a lucky dog because it shows some motivation and interest to begin with. Somebody's going to take the trouble to find you and hire you. They care and they're going to work on that.
Mm-hmm.
Fortunately, most people don't want to do that. I was really drawn into kind of understanding the reality of the dogs that I care about. I didn't want to guess what was going on. I wanted to sort of come as close as I could to understanding how they do think.
Mm-hmm.
And I was very surprised by what I was learning. It was people tell all kinds of stories about what their dogs are thinking and their dogs are feeling, and they're angry and they're upset and they're resentful and this and that. And of course, they don't have words. They don't have language. They don't have narrative stories like we do. And the stuff that I was reading and the behaviors I was talking to were more and more connecting dogs to autistic thinking, that the consciousness of a dog is very similar to autism, mm-hmm. in that it is sensory images, mm-hmm. that trigger responses.
Mm-hmm.
And not so much in terms of words, but in terms of images and responses. And working with Rose and other dogs on the farm, that's really what I see. You know, when Rose bails me out of a tough spot, she's not sitting there thinking, well, you know, I've got to save this idiot again. He's in trouble again. she's reacting to a series of stimulus that mm-hmm. are beyond my imagination. You know, one of the things I love about this novel I'm writing about a border collie on a farm is I'm imagining her running through the woods. And you know, we can't even imagine what they see that we don't see, what they smell, what they hear. It's a million stories are pouring into her head all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Not only with sheep, but, you know, birds that I don't see and mice in the ground and things she smells. And, they're all telling her stories all mm-hmm. the time. And I can imagine her mind is this, you know, riotous kaleidoscope of images and lights and shades of gray and colors and thoughts. And it's beyond my ability to grasp it. I don't see these things. I don't feel these things. I just have no idea what's going on in there.
Mm-hmm.
But the behaviors talk about their brains working like a microprocessor to take a lot of images and process them in unimaginable speed and complexity.
Mm-hmm.
And all this goes on completely out of our awareness. Mm. And I like sometimes to test myself by just not putting words into her head.
Yeah.
You know, and just not doing that. And then that helps me see kind of what's going on in there.
Mm-hmm. Well, We're going to take a quick break. We will be back in just a few minutes with author John Katz of Soul of a Dog, Reflections on the Spirits of the Animals of Bedlam Farm. You're listening to The Dog Talk Show, an evolved perspective on life with dogs.
Yeah, this is a story of famous dog. For the dog that chases its tail will be busy.
Are you a doctor, dentist, or therapist? Have you ever wished you could take your dog to work with you? Visit HealingAllies.com to find out how you can train your dog to become a clinical therapy dog in your office or clinic. Clinical therapy dogs provide people with joy, affection, and emotional support in healthcare settings. Research shows that therapy animals have positive psychological and physiological effects on clients and patients. Meet your newest staff member, your dog. Visit HealingAllies.com or call 206-406-1455 for more information. That's HealingAllies.com.
The Natural Pet Pantry offers everything you need for feeding your pet a raw food diet. Most health issues pets face today are a result of poor diet. The Natural Pet Pantry makes raw, cooked, and custom meals for your pets, all prepared locally using only grade A meats and vegetables. Located in stores around the Puget Sound, the home delivery is available from Stanwood to Gig Harbor. Visit naturalpetpantry.com or call 206-248-1079 for more information on how to add health and longevity to your beloved pet's life. That's naturalpetpantry.com.
Hi, I'm Vicki St. Clair. I want to invite you to join me every Monday at noon for Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. We'll talk with innovative business leaders, medical and health professionals, authors, filmmakers, adventurers, and ordinary people leading extraordinary lives. Join me Mondays at noon for Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair.
Monday, September 21st on Conversations Live, Rich Horworth of the Strategic Thinking Institute shares what today's managers are looking for and what few of your peers know.
Check out our guest schedule at conversationslive.net and join me Mondays at noon.
Do you have an injury, old or new, that won't heal? Are you fighting a cold or illness you can't kick? Do you feel like you've tried everything and are still struggling to find wellness and balance in your physical health? Have you been unimpressed with acupuncture in the past? For over a decade, Robert Meduzia has been making a difference for people who thought they had exhausted their options. Don't settle for pain and illness. Call 425-828-6190. That's 425-828-6190. Again, 425-828-6190. The Acupuncture and Sports Clinic of Kirkland. Heal faster, play longer.
Get current weather, traffic, and news. Visit 1150kknw.com and stay informed with Alternative Talk 1150 AM.
Nothing but the dog in me.
Welcome back to the Dog Talk Show. I'm your host, Julie Forbes. You're listening to Alternative Talk 1150 AM. We're back with author John Katz of Soul of a Dog, Reflections on the Spirits of the Animals of Bedlam Farm. Welcome back, John.
Thank you.
So, you know, we're talking about, in your book, you talk about all sorts of different types of animals. I love what you say about your goats and how they just...
obnoxious.
They're just...
Yeah. Obnoxious.
They're just criticizing you all the time. And,
the jeering gallery.
Yes. And then about this gigantic, no, I know it's not a cow, but...
The Swiss steer.
Yeah. Well,
Elvis.
Yeah. And how he's manipulated you into giving him extra bales of hay and candy bars and stuff like that. And your sort of awareness of that process and how you kind of got caught and had to kind of stop.
Well, it's funny. I think we write the stories we want to write with these animals. And, you know, I perceive the goats are always yelling at me and jeering and bleeding and baaing. And I perceive them as laughing at me, which, of course, is not what they're doing. They probably just want to eat, and
yeah.
But there's a running commentary going, so that's the role they fill for me. Elvis is a 3,000-pound Swiss steer. He's a monster, and when I'm writing in my study, he started coming to the fence, the pasture fence, looking, saw me through the window, and he started bellowing in this, you know, really piteous, pleading way, I thought. And I would go running out there and, you know, what's wrong? And I said, well, he had to be hungry.
Mm-hmm.
So I would drag out a bale of hay and give it to him, and he would devour it and then go off happily. And the next day he was back at the same time and doing the same thing. And I thought, well, he's just not getting enough to eat. So I would run out and give him a bale of hay a day. And the vet came and I said, you know, Elvis is, I think, not eating enough. And he said, you're out of your mind. He said, he's a monster. He said, he's got plenty of food. And it occurred to me who the dumb beast is in the relationship, you know. I said, who, you know, this is a cow, for God's sakes, and he's smarter than I am. And this, of course, is also what dogs do so brilliantly, is they figure out, they know how to get us to do things for them.
Mm-hmm.
They know how to get us to feed them and give them treats and get them into bed. And raccoons haven't figured that out, which is why they suffer more than dogs. And squirrels haven't figured that out. And they don't play us that way. They don't look us in the eye and wag their tails and run up and lick us on the hand. So we don't see them as unconditionally loving us, so we don't take very good care of them. You know, humans are rough on most of the species in the world, mm-hmm. Animal species, but not dogs and cats. And I think it's their genius, is their ability to touch these little emotional cords in us and get us to respond to them.
Mm-hmm.
And people more and more, I think, you know, I have trouble with the equations of them as children. I mean, they're not like children to me. I have a barn cat mother I wrote about in the book.
Yes. I have a quote about her.
You have a quote about my mother?
Yeah.
Well, a friend of mine said she had a cat, and the cat was like her child. And I said, okay, well, I want to observe the cat and see what that means. And I hadn't really paid a lot of attention to them. And, you know, they get rid of the rats and the mice, and they're very independent. So I spent an afternoon watching Mother, and I was really shocked. I was really shocked.
Yeah.
It was like a 3-hour killing spree.
Yeah.
And torturing and dismembering for fun.
Yeah.
With the exquisite cruelty and glee.
Yeah.
And I thought, wow, they're really not like us.
Yeah.
Which, of course, you know, they're not evil. They're just being cats.
Yeah. Well, I actually have a quote about just that, about Mother. But I also want to let listeners know, if you have a comment or thoughts about whether you think dogs have souls or reflections on that. For the first caller today, we are giving away $50 in gift vouchers for Wellness Pet Food. So give us a call right now, 425-373-5527. That's 425-373-5527, or toll-free in Western Washington, 888-298-5569. And we will send you out $50 in Wellness Pet Food gift vouchers. You can either leave a message as to whether you think yes or no dogs have souls. If you'd like to talk on air, we would love to hear your comments live. That's 425-373-5527 or toll free in Western Washington, 888-298-5569. First caller gets $50 in wellness gift vouchers. So I have a quote about Mother, who is your cat, your barn cat. How old is Mother?
I'm not positive. I think she's probably 4 or 5 years.
Okay. So it says, if Mother were equal to or superior to humans in her self-awareness, consciousness, soul, and spirit, if she were, as so many people say of their pets, just like a child, then probably I should call the police, have Mother arrested or committed. And, you know, and you talk about, you know, we need to really be careful in conversations of good and evil, that we don't have those conversations about animals, because if we did attribute that to, like, as you were saying, you were observing Mother for an afternoon and it was like a killing spree, a joyous killing spree, it'd be like, oh my God, she's a sociopath. But that's what cats do. And I think that that's really important to remember in today's society, as there's all of these dog aggression laws being made, and that we, you know, human responsibility is really the main issue. Aggression is natural. That's how dogs communicate, part of how they communicate with each other. That's how Rose moves livestock is, I mean, if you filmed it and looked at it, it would technically be aggression. She's using her teeth, she's lunging, she's nipping, all that kind of stuff. But then when it's, you know, when we see that in society, people tend to freak out and it's like, ah, bad dog. That's a bad dog. And, you know, we just really, I don't know what the answer is, but it's got to be a balance, and that we can't forget that that's part of what it is to be a dog.
That's right. And I think the bottom line is that, in a way, our culture is sort of at war with dogs and all animals, but especially, I think, dogs, because almost everything that dogs naturally do is either illegal or we don't approve of it. You know, they eat poop and they run around and they want to have sex and they want to run free and they want to, you know, be with us and come to work and do all kinds of things that they like that we can't let them do. And so I think when you get a dog, you almost go to war with the dog's natural instincts in a way. You know, most people don't like natural dog behavior. They want the Disney dog.
Yeah.
They want the cute dog that's going to sit there and not make any mess or smell, or they don't want to deal with diarrhea,
yeah.
Which I talk about all over the country, really. and I think that's a real problem for dogs because I think dogs are being restricted more and more. They can't socialize. It's hard to socialize them because they can't go anywhere. There's lawsuits every time one of them, you know, even growls at somebody.
Mm-hmm.
So they're being restricted and monitored more and more. I think their lives are very stressful. I think when we add to that, we're projecting our own emotional disorders and neurotic behavior onto them, separation anxiety and willfulness, and start misreading them that way, then they get in even more trouble because we're disappointed in them. We medicate them. We don't know how to train them intelligently because we're misperceiving them and their motives. I mean, I think it's really dangerous to give a dog motives, you know, like good and evil. He's being bad. He's being good. A bad dog is a dangerous term for them,
mm-hmm.
because they're not ever being bad any more than they're really being good. They're just being dogs.
Mm-hmm.
And you can try to change the behavior or modify it. But when you start putting these moral judgments on a dog, you know, that makes it easier to kill them or lock them up or get rid of them.
Mm-hmm.
If it's a bad dog, then why should you keep it? And why should you train it? And why should you worry about it? And I think that the projection of, I mean, what separates us from them is that we can be good or bad. You know, we're responsible for our behavior. We can be bad. If we can hurt somebody, it's wrong. We get punished. A dog is simply behaving naturally. A cat is behaving naturally. And to put our own morality on it, I think, makes it easier to kind of punish and harm them for what's very natural to them.
Even more so, I would say, you know, I see a lot of times dogs doing what they do as a result of their humans and what we actually create as a result of how we are interacting with the dogs or how we are reacting to certain situations, and the dogs are kind of feeding off of that feeling and energy of the situation, or how we're only, you know, we get a dog and we only give them love and affection and we don't pay attention to their animal needs. That causes issues. But then, you know, turning that on to the dog, that's the bad dog. One thing I hear all the time is, but he knew he, you know, as soon as I came, he knew
he wasn't was being supposed. Mad.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, he's probably more anticipating your reaction than, you know, knowing that he shouldn't have done it, because that doesn't stop the behavior. They don't think, well, gosh, that garbage, I mean, with Chewy, my lab mix, you know, he would get into the garbage if it was there to get into and I wasn't home. He'd get into it because it was there and
right.
There was no reason not to.
Right.
So it's like, okay, well, I just figured out, you know, fortunately now the garbage is in a closet, so it's not an issue. But he would do it. And unless I gave him a reason, you know, set something up so that it was like a booby trap and something happened so that it wasn't worth it for him to get into the garbage, then he would continue to do it. And it's not good or bad. It's just...
He's a dog.
It's an opportunistic thing. So
I had a woman call me on a talk show and said, well, I have a lab and I'm really unhappy because she's digging holes in the backyard. What should I do? I said, you know, get a poodle. I don't know. You got a lab. And that's what they do. And they're going to look for disgusting stuff and they're going to find it.
Yeah.
And then you're going to see it later, probably.
Yeah.
And if you don't want that, then don't get a lab. But I think also what you did was great because I do the same thing. I just don't give them an opportunity to fail. When I'm out of the house, my dogs are in crates.
Mm-hmm.
So I've never had one damage the house. So I don't have to come in the house saying, what's going on?
Right.
What did you do?
When you see the garbage spread out all over the kitchen.
Look what he did, you bad dog.
Oh.
And then the dog gets more tense about your coming and going, and it becomes an issue that spreads.
Mm-hmm. Well, we have to take another break.
Okay.
We'll be back in just a few minutes. We have $50 in wellness pet food gift vouchers for the first caller. So give us a call, 425-373-5527. That's 425-373-5527. Or toll free in Western Washington, 888-298-5569. We'll be back in just a few minutes with author John Katz of Soul of a Dog.
Fido, your leash is too long. You go where you don't belong.
You've been digging in the rubble, getting bitches in trouble.
Is your pet suffering from allergies, cancer, arthritis, back pain, or digestive upset? The Holistic Animal Clinic treats these problems and more using holistic veterinary medicine and acupuncture to bring your pet to health. Dr. Masami Seplo's treatment supports the body's natural ability to heal itself, are non-invasive and highly effective. If your pet doesn't tolerate medication or nothing you've tried is working, visit theholisticanimalclinic.net or call 206-723-3809 to make an appointment. That's www.holisticanimalclinic.net, 206-723-3809.
Do you have legal questions, need to know where to turn?
Hi, this is Rick Gregrick, your host of Northwest Legal Compass.
Northwest Legal Compass will address your questions on a variety of legal topics, including estate planning, asset protection, real estate and business planning, and more. The legal and accounting staff of Gregrick & Associates are dedicated to providing you with superior legal and tax services. Their integrated counsel is geared to the achievement of your goals.
Visit us on the web at rjglegal.com.
Be sure and tune in every Friday at noon here on Alternative Talk 1150.
Urban Beast. Fresh, modern, fun. Seattle's destination for all your pet needs. Located in the South Lake Union neighborhood at 217 Yale Avenue North, directly across from the REI flagship store. Urban Beast features unique accessories such as toys, beds, collars, leashes, and more. They have a great assortment of healthy food and yummy treats for the pets you love. Open 7 days a week and offering free parking in the Alley 24 garage. Come see what the Beast is all about.
This is Julie Forbes, dog training, behavior, and nutrition specialist, and owner of Sensitive Dog, thoughtful guidance for you and your dog. If your dog needs basic obedience training, a behavior evaluation, or food consultation, I can help you. Call me at 206-372-7399 or visit my website, www.sensitivedog.com. I teach group obedience classes, in-home lessons, and evaluations, and a two-week intensive training program called Higher Education. Again, I'm Julie Forbes, Seattle's dog behavior training and nutrition specialist, www.sensitivedog.com.
Kemmley Electric Incorporated is a full-service electrical contractor. From simple home repairs to full remodels, new construction, and small commercial projects, our qualified electricians do it all. We pride ourselves on our workmanship and professional standards, delivered with value in mind. Located in historic Ballard, Kemmley Electric serves the greater Seattle metropolitan area. Licensed, bonded, and insured. Kemmley Electric welcomes all inquiries about your electrical needs. Visit the website KemmleyElectric.com. That's K-E-M-L-Y Electric.com.
Talk radio with a difference. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
Welcome back to the Dog Talk Show, brought to you in part by Wellness Pet Food. You're listening to Alternative Talk, 1150 AM. And we're back with author John Katz of Soul of a Dog, Reflections on the Spirits of the Animals of Bedlam Farm. Welcome back, John.
Thank you.
So, let's see. We were just talking about your killer cat. Mother, I've lived with cats before, and I can say they're definitely different than dogs in that way. Something that I thought was wonderful that you wrote about and we're talking about was about Fly. And, you know, that whole chapter about her, and she was a rescue border collie, and your experience with that and your discomfort or dis-ease with, I'll just read a quote from the book. You put it more eloquently than I would. Fly unlocked a response in me. Something I'd been circumspect of, something that I now consciously seek to limit. It felt good to rescue her, pleasurable. But I don't feel entirely at ease about the status animals have in my life or in our society. And then you continue to say, I don't want to rescue animals primarily because I want to feel better about myself or better than some other people or morally superior to anyone. The best part of my life with animals is the humility they teach, the humanity they foster. It's easy to feel virtuous, harder to be aware of one's own self-interest. And I appreciate that awareness. And will you talk a little bit more about what it is when you say you don't feel entirely at ease about the status animals have in your life?
Well, I think you can easily exploit animals to make yourself feel better. And I think because you rescue a dog doesn't make you a good human being or better than anybody else. And I think some people lose sight of that. You know, I think if you do it for the dog and you're thinking about the dog, the dog's going to have a good life. If you do it to make yourself feel better, it's just another way of disassociating yourself, I think, from people and from getting the false idea that it makes you a morally superior person. And I think I was conscious of that when, you know, I have a dog, Izzy, who's a rescue dog. And, you know, people say to me all the time when the dog has behavioral problems, well, he was abused. I say, how do you know? Did he tell you that? And they say, well, you can just tell. You know, it's obvious because he doesn't like people. He doesn't like men. He doesn't like somebody with sticks. And as you know, I'm sure as a trainer, you know, anxious dogs, all kinds of things make dogs anxious.
And as a cattle dog owner.
Right, as a cattle dog. And I have border collies.
Yeah.
And I was going around saying, well, Izzy's a rescue dog, and he was abandoned on a farm, and I took him in. And that was becoming his story. You know, he was an abused rescue dog, and he probably was. And I said, I'm going to stop saying that because, one thing, you know, he was pretty happy when I got him. I mean, he'd been running around a farm for 5 years, which isn't the worst thing for a border collie. But for another, it was something I was doing that was just exploitive, it seemed to me. You know, he wasn't complaining about it. You know, he's not worried about being a rescue dog, and I didn't want to see him that way, either in terms of training him or using him to puff myself up. So I found myself referring to him, well, he must have been abused, I said a couple of times, or he was a rescue dog, I got off a farm. I decided I was just going to stop saying that because that really wasn't his story anymore. And whatever had happened was in the past, and we had moved on with it. And I just didn't want to be using him in that way.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, millions of dogs are rescued by wonderful people with, you know, great hearts and wonderful motives. But I think, it's not a ticket to heaven. And it doesn't mean that you're, you know, better than anybody else if you do it. Because I think it takes the focus away from the dog and on you. You know, and you have a vested interest in most of the dog being messed up. And I think that's, I'd be interested how you feel about this as a trainer. I think a lot of people are just happier with their dogs being a mess. Because if they're not a mess, then, you know, it's hard for them to feel better about taking the dog in. You know, they like the dog to be a problem, to have trouble, to be troubled, to be angry, to be, you know, bitter about their life and all. I just think it's something to be careful about, not to use dogs in that way and not to write stories for them that we, you know, can't really accurately vouch for.
Mm. Well, I'd say two things about that. One is to, you know, typically our animals are a reflection of us. So there's probably a lot of subconscious stuff that's just getting played out and with how sensitive dogs are to our nonverbal communication, that's going to kind of spill over onto them and can actually cause anxiety. And so I think that dogs mirror us in a way. I think that focusing on the animal is probably a way to distract us from our own issues. And there was something else too, but I forget it. So people being attached to the dogs being a mess. Yeah, I mean, I think it's a reflection, it's a distraction, but, it's also a way for us to think about them and maybe avoid responsibility for ourselves.
Yeah,
and
that's what I worry about, is that it makes us feel better about having them, if they're a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Because as you know, I mean, training a dog is hard. It's a long commitment. You have to really look at yourself and how you're acting and how your mannerisms and
mm-hmm.
and as you said, get in touch with the animal parts of your own consciousness. It's just hard to do.
You know, in thinking about my own experience, especially with Chewy, who was a lot of presence from I got him when I was a junior in college, and he lived with me from 20 to 32, which is like two lifetimes just in that decade. And he was very much for me a sort of a handrail, guardrail for me. And you talk a lot about, you know, the role that dogs have played in enabling you to live your life the way that you live it. And I really, really connected with that. And there was a lot to Chewy. And he was loud. He was demanding. He was sweet. He was devoted. This was my feeling, my experience of him. He was bossy. I mean, there were a lot of challenging, very challenging parts to him that I really celebrated. So I think it's also like going back to that dogs are animals and dogs are going to display behaviors that we wouldn't want a human to display, but they're dogs. And it's a matter like if you're going to live with a dog, just letting them be who they are, because they let us be who we are without judgment. So there's certainly, I mean, that's my what I do for as a profession is helping people deal with undesirable behaviors and bring dogs into a, you know, a more balanced state, ground them so that they're not misbehaving, so to speak, and that they're more manageable in society so that they therefore have more freedom. But, you know, there were lots of dog aspects of Chewy that a lot of people probably wouldn't have loved to live with, but that was just who he was, and there wasn't any changing that either. So,
and right, and I think there's a point with the dog where in order to change the behavior, you almost have to destroy the character, you know, where there's just you're going so much against their natural instincts that to fix it or mm-hmm. to change it would almost damage them and yeah. take away their presence, as you put it, which is a good word. I feel that even with Rose, the Border Collie, you know, she's not a dog most people would want. She doesn't cuddle. She hates treats. She growls at people who try to pet her.
Yeah.
She's very grumpy. And she doesn't play. And she's not cute. And people come to the farm and they look at Lenore, the lab, and they roll around with her or Izzy, who gets in people's laps. And I always say to them, well, which dog, if you could take a dog home, which one would you take? And they never say Rose. They always want either the cute dog or the cuddly dog
mm-hmm.
Or the dog that knows how to play them and looks in their eyes and gets them to ooh and ah. And yet Rose is by far the most remarkable dog I know, and in many levels. I mean, you just, you know, just an extraordinary creature. You know, has run the farm and helped me out and made decisions, and I think, well, she's the most natural dog I have, but she's the one almost nobody wants. I don't even know where she sleeps. You know, she doesn't sleep anywhere near me. She comes in once a night to check on things, and then goes off to some corner of the house.
Yeah.
I think she patrols all night. She looks out the window and looks for trouble. But I think it's interesting that the dog I would say is by far the most extraordinary animal that I know. And she's triggered 5 books already
yeah.
and novels and all this stuff.
Yeah.
Is the one nobody really wants.
Yeah. And she's like, fine, because I don't want to go with you yet. You know, I wouldn't want to go with you anyway.
No, absolutely. No, she would hate to be on a book tour. She doesn't want any of that. And I noticed, too, when people come to visit, they all approach her in this way that I think is revealing. They coo at her and talk to her and chase her around and keep calling her all the time and bother her. And she just gets really annoyed with it and finally goes off into a corner and disappears.
Mm-hmm.
But it's hard for people to just let her be herself.
Yeah.
And I always say to them, she doesn't, you know, she's not going to bite you, but she doesn't want to be your pal.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have anything to offer her.
Yeah.
And people don't want to accept that.
Yeah. Well, that brings up a very good point. We're going to take our last break, and we'll be back in just a few minutes with John Katz, author of Soul of a Dog. You're listening to The Dog Talk Show on Alternative Talk 1150.
The skies are charcoal gray. It's a dreary downtown day. But at the end of my 30-foot leash, my little friend...
Wellness Natural Food for Pets uses simple, pure, authentic ingredients to create food you can trust to provide the foundation of your pet's well-being. All wellness recipes include lean meats, whole grains, fruits, and veggies with no meat byproducts, no wheat, no corn, no soy, or artificial preservatives. For an exclusive savings offer and to find wellness at a pet specialty retailer near you, visit wellnesspetfood.com/Seattle. That's wellnesspetfood.com/Seattle. Join Wellness on Facebook and Twitter today.
Get your dog to smile with treats good enough for people, but specially made for dogs. Introducing Bitolove, the treat that's made in the U.S. with USDA-inspected meat, without any artificial flavors, colors, or byproducts. It's guaranteed to make them smile. So the next time your four-legged family member comes walking through the doggy door after a hard day of chasing birds and digging holes, put a big smile on their face with some slow-roasted, mouth-watering Bitolove dog treats. And don't forget to stop by Bitolove.com to learn more about our variety of flavors.
The Barking Lounge is Seattle's premier dog daycare and overnight boarding facility. With 24-hour supervision dedicated to the health and well-being of your pooch, it's no wonder why the Barking Lounge was voted best doggy daycare in Western Washington. New customers can mention this ad and receive a free temperament test and day of play care, a $44 value. Offer available for a limited time, valid for new customers only, and has no cash value.
This is Martha Norwalk. Every Sunday morning, beginning at 9 a.m., thanks in part to Jones & Company Pets in Marysville, we cover the world of animals. This week, we're educating the human animal because the better we are, the happier and healthier our animal friends are. Boston Carter, local karma specialist, joins us again to teach us her mechanics of consciousness. Find out why you think, feel, and behave the way you do, and how to work through your issues. You've got some homework, so check my website, and then join us for Martha Norwalk's Animal World, Sunday morning, 9 a.m. to noon, right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150.
Do you want to improve your health, take less medicine, or avoid medication at all? The naturopathic physicians at the Institute of Complementary Medicine, with over 60 years of experience, will help you on natural, practical solutions for better health. Ready for your annual checkup, feeling stressed or anxious, or have a chronic problem like allergies, diabetes, or sleep issues? Call 206-726-0034 or go to www.icmedicine.com to schedule an appointment. We're located on First Hill in Seattle, and most insurance is accepted. 206-726-0034. icmedicine.com. Natural medicine at its best.
Click the shows page on 1150kknw.com for the scoop on Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
Welcome back to the Dog Talk Show, an evolved perspective on life with dogs. We're back with John Katz, author of Soul of a Dog. Welcome back, John.
Thank you.
So just to make sure we get this information in, you are in the area. We have John's actually in the booth as opposed to over the phone for this interview. You are going to be at Village Books in Bellingham tonight at 7 p.m.
Right.
And tomorrow noon at Elliott Bay Bookstore. And then 7 o'clock at Third Place Books. So you're doing some appearances at different places. And will you be doing any talkings or readings or just sort of meeting people?
Yes, I'll be talking, reading, and taking questions.
Okay.
Probably Elliott Bay will be a little shorter because it's just a lunchtime thing. But mm-hmm. No, I take questions and gas on for a while.
Great. And do you have a website?
Do, bedlamfarm.com.
bedlamfarm.com, and that's bedlam farm.com.
Right.
So, you know, I had to make the most difficult decision of my life this weekend, this Friday, of whether to, try to keep my dog alive at all costs, my 12-year-old dog who was bleeding into his abdomen, or to let him go. And my main commitment was what is the best for him. And of course it was like, oh, I wish you could just tell me. What do you want? Like, I wish you could just tell me. And a lot of people said the common thread message really was follow your instinct, listen to your gut. And I also was thinking about, you know, if I'm putting him through all of this stuff, potentially having him really suffer for nothing, am I doing that for him or for me? And it became clear that it was definitely that I would be wanting to keep him around if, you know, best case scenario was he would have been with me for just a few more months. So that's really just avoiding the grieving of him and all that. So that was really for me. So I decided to just let him go and to let him go happily and peacefully and without crisis. And since he's, you know, since I've been without him for a few days and experiencing what I've been experiencing and reflecting on my relationship with him, I wonder, you know, something I've been thinking about is, how am I connecting with, in what ways do I connect with him that perhaps I could be connecting with my partner, for instance? You know, in what ways do we have relationships with dogs that we don't necessarily have with other people because it's easier for us? You know, I don't have much real specific, you know, it's just kind of a feeling that I have, something I've been kind of asking myself. But he was such a, I mean, unconditional. I loved every cell of his body. I loved his naughty things. I loved, you know, the sweetness, all that kind of stuff. And it was like, gosh, you know, what about the potential of having that kind of depth of love with fellow humans?
Well, I think it's a wonderful observation and very important, I think. I think the companion animal explosion comes a lot out of human need. You know, what's going on in America with dogs and cats is not happening in most countries, any countries really. Even England doesn't, not as animal crazy as we're getting. And I think we are a disconnected culture. And I think there's a danger for dogs being given too much emotional responsibility for us. You had a wonderful relationship with him, and he sounds like a wonderful dog. But at the same time, you know, you have to ask the question of, we're becoming a society that's getting more unconditional support from animals, and it often is getting from people.
Yeah.
And we're spending more money on healthcare than we spend on children healthcare for dogs. And that's a change. I think what you're already doing and doing it naturally is using the dog in a good way to learn about love, mm-hmm. which I think is something they can give us and has happened to me. You know, I went through a tough time personally and ended up in a new relationship. And Lenore's the reason, really, the love dog. I was really, she was showing me how to love. She was keeping it alive in me.
Mm-hmm.
And every time I look at that dog, it's like the same look you get when you talk about Chewy. I just smile. And I would sing to her at night. And she, I'd wake up with her head on my shoulder and her big brown eyes batting at me. And I think she really kept love alive for me. And what I took from it, okay, I want to take that, and I want to find a person, you know, not love the dogs, but really find a person I can love in somewhat that way. And I did. And I really credit her with that. I think she's, I call her the supervisor of love. Because if I hadn't had that experience, I think it would have been a lot harder for me. I mean, I was pretty closed up. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, I think what you take from something like Chewy, in my experience, is the ability to love, staying open to it, being open to it, and using it in a relationship with a person. I think that's when dogs really, a gift they give us is showing us how to live with people too.
Mm-hmm.
That's a beautiful gift, I think.
Yeah. And, you know, being able to express the sweetness that we do with our dogs to our fellow humans as well.
Yeah.
Because we don't do that enough, I don't
no,
think.
No, I agree.
Road rage and all that kind of stuff. Right.
Cell phone anxiety.
Yeah. Well, John Katz is in the area. He'll be in Bellingham tonight at 7 p.m. at Village Books, tomorrow at noon at Elliott Bay Bookstore, and 7 o'clock at Third Place Books. And how can people get your book, Soul of a Dog?
Anywhere. So anywhere their bookstores are online.
All right. Highly, highly recommend this book. It's been a wonderful read, wonderful for me in this time, for sure.
Yes, I'm sorry about Chewy, but he's like a great dog, and you were wise to let him go.
Thank you. And I certainly, you know, and he really has taught me a lot, and certainly a lot about love, and, you know, what I can do now is just try to give back what he gave to me. So this show, for sure, is dedicated to him. We will be back next week, same time, same place. Of course, as always, all of our past shows are archived on the website, www.dogtalkshow.com. If you missed any part of this wonderful interview or any of our past shows over the 6 months or more, you can visit the website, www.dogtalkshow.com. Just click on the podcast page, and all of the shows are there at your disposal. Also, too, we have wonderful dog talk show car stickers. I have some for you, perhaps for your tractor, John, back at the farm. And also sending you with some bags of Bitto Love Treats, a local company, dog treats that are great for training. So you can you can share the love that way.
Appreciate it.
Yeah. So if you would like a car sticker, send me an email, host@dogtalkshow.com. And I would be happy to send you out a free car sticker. So we look forward to being with you next week. Thanks for listening to the Dog Talk Show, an evolved perspective on life with dogs.